overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
I was told that this is Palm Sunday, this Sunday, which means Easter is next Sunday. And so this is an opportunity for us to reflect on what is the significance, perhaps. Next Sunday is my 33rd anniversary of coming to Huntsville. I did my first sermon on Easter Sunday in 1989. And it's always very sweet for me to reflect on how Easter Sunday is about a resurrection. And when you realize that, as Ernest Holmes says, we have to have our own resurrection. That is a returning home to our true nature, to that spiritual essence, self, that was never born and never dies. But in order to have this resurrection of our true nature, there must be a crucifixion of the false self, the separate self, the me that perceives itself as other than the oneness. And when that me no longer is running the show, then we lose, in a strange sort of sense, our inner critic. We lose the narrator that has a story and an opinion. We lose all the conclusions that we have amassed over this beautiful life that we've been given. And when the conclusions fall away, the opinions fall away, the story falls away, what is left? And that's what we come here to experience. That essence that we all share, that life, that one life, that Dr. Ernest Holmes says is God's life. And that life is our life. And so as we shared last week, Emerson says we are part and parcel of God. And through lowly listening, we can access the passageway of this divine presence, not necessarily as thought, but oftentimes as images, as realizations, as recognitions. And then we hear Meister Eckhart, who says, he who can see beauty in the smallest of things is better than seeing an angel. And so we begin to see the divine operating everywhere we look around, in the bursting flowers that are coming alive after a long period of being dormant, of the birds that seem to be very frisky and flying all over and trying to find their partner and making nests in our bushes, life coming back to show us that spring is emerging. And then we could reference, are we experiencing a spring within our own hearts? Are we experiencing this fresh newness that is calling to us from everywhere we look? And even that is a portal for going home. So this Sunday, we're going to speak about coming home. And the irony of coming home is that we're already there. It's not a place that we go to. It's a remembrance of what always is. Huh. And then we hear that song from The Wiz that says, when I think of home, I think of a place where there's love overflowing. So could we go into that place within ourselves where love overflows? In our beautiful class, They talk about a three-part practice. The first is just to be present with what is. The second is to touch our heart space. That's that place where love overflows. And then the third is to act, to leap, to move into some form of expression. Once we come from this loving place that we could call home, fully present with what is, and then we take the next step. Not a calculated step, not a well thought out intentional step, but just the next step. And we hear the birds outside singing. They don't plot their journey by thinking excessively about it. Rather, they just open their wings and they leap into the next inevitable moment. And they sing their song. And if they're fortunate enough, they make a nest and they lay their eggs and they give birth to a new form of expression. When we see ourselves interwoven in this beautiful expression of life, it's because that true nature is flowering within us. And then we participate breath by breath, moment by moment, choice by choice. The Bible says, choose you this day who you will serve, God or mammon. Choose you in this holy instant what we will reflect on, the divine presence or our stuff. We always have a choice. So for this brief period together, I invite you to put your attention on that which doesn't come and go, on that which is always there, on that sanctuary garden within yourself and all around you that Jesus called the kingdom of heaven. And he says, and when we seek it first, everything then is added unto us. So could we, as the seeker, discover something that's always there? And then instead of being the seeker, as they say, you become the sought. It's as if this divine presence has been seeking you all along as its expression of love. And when we yield, we surrender, we open to that, then this sacred essence self can reveal her inner beauty, her inner radiance, her peace, her creativity, her compassion, her benevolence, her justice. And as we participate in those qualities, we are inviting the divine presence to live this life through us in uniquely beautiful ways. And we don't have to figure it out. We can just trust and allow and celebrate the essence of beingness. Emerson says, be and not seem. He says, let us acquiesce, surrender. Let us get our bloated nothingness out of the way. And as we do, we connect with the divine circuits. So this Sunday, we connect with those divine circuits. We turn them on, we let them shine, and we have fun as we explore the deeper truths that are always revealing themselves in us and all around us. In that spirit of intimacy with the One, I invite you to open your eyes, put your hands over your heart, touch that space within you, wherein God lies. Of course, we know it doesn't lie within us because we're within it, but it's so much bigger. And when you get playful with it, it gets personal. To have a personal relationship with an impersonal presence. Does that sound counterintuitive? This impersonal something that is the allness of being, and yet it's deeply personal because it has taken up residence within its creation. Is that too ominous to consider, to ponder? Not think about, but to just ponder it. You know, I'm exploring Coming Home, and it was inspired by this beautiful book by Lex Hickson called Coming Home. And he studies all the great spiritual paths on the planet. It's a very tedious read, this book. And they're all saying the same thing, that there is this place within us that is longing to express, and the many different maps are there to get you to this place. But once you get to the place, you don't need the map anymore. In Buddhism, they call Hinayana Buddhism is the big boat Buddhism, and Hinayana is the little boat, Mahayana is the big boat. The boats are the maps. And they say, once you get in the boat from the shore of ignorance to the shore of enlightenment, get rid of the boat. And he's saying the same thing. You don't need... So we have Christianity, and the boat was Jesus. And Jesus was an example of the embodiment of the Christ. Once the Christ awakens, and you know that that's what you are, well, then you don't really need the example anymore. Jesus was the great example, not the great exception, you know. And so many of the religions think of him as the only Son of God. No, we're all children of the Most High. Now, you won't hear that in the Christian churches, because I once, as a young man, asked that question. Is it not enough to know that we are all the Christ? No. You have to have Jesus as your personal Savior, I was told. And I went, oh. And when I studied with the Sufis and the Muslims, they said, all you have to do is surrender to Allah, and you're a Muslim. Just to surrender to God, and you're a Muslim? I said, so I found out in one holy instant, I'm a Muslim, but I'm not a Christian. And I thought it was enough to be the Christ. So you get to discern where it is that you fit in this beautiful tapestry of belonging to the universe. Isn't that a great idea? Belonging to the universe, the one song. Last week I read that poem, The Universe is a Bee. The universe is a flower. The universe is a sanctuary garden, which is what I'm talking about this week. So what if your garden within your soul could be a sanctuary where it's sacred, what you choose to grow in the garden of your soul? We're a choice point in every moment. So could we choose to plant lovely thoughts? I spoke on coming back to the center the first week, the center that's always there. The second week I spoke about beauty, and beauty truly is in the eyes of the beholder. Truth is beauty. Beauty is truth, as they say in philosophy. And that a happy person, someone who is choosing happy thoughts, will see beauty in the same place that an unhappy person will see ugliness. And so then you could choose to say, I am beautiful, you are beautiful, the whole existing universe is beautiful. Ugliness is merely a manifestation of unhappiness. Wow. So then you can see beauty even when you have a disaster. Someone was saying that when all the rains, there are big puddles in their driveway or in their yard. And we have a big puddle on our front sidewalk. Every time it rains, it gathers. We call it Lake Speckles, because she used to love to play in the water. She was a water dog. Bert doesn't want water. Humphrey doesn't want water. But baby Speck, you'd show her a puddle, and she'd wallow in that. You'd be by a stream, and she'd walk down that stream. Everybody else is on the path. She's in the water because she loves the water. So could we have the same kind of enthusiasm instead of calling it a bad thing? It's just a thing. So we have Lake Speckles in the front, and every time it rains, you could say it's a problem, but it really isn't. So I just want to give you a little taste of how he starts off this treaty on coming home, and how he makes it universal. He says, to abide as awareness itself in the simplicity and luminosity of the present moment without any will or effort, because if there is will or effort, there's a lot of me there. So there could be a willingness, but not a willfulness. There's a difference there. So without will or without effort, then we are ushered into a magical world that we've never left. A magical world that we never left. That's why you see me touching my heart all the time. Because when I go here, I'm not up here. I'm in this kind of loving place, and I can feel it. Lovely Jean Ann, last November, she brought to the center on my birthday, the week before my birthday, a glass container with a cloth top, and in that were some twigs, and on those twigs were two cocoons of butterflies. It was my birthday gift. And I'm going to give birth, a midwife, a monarch butterfly, or was it a swallowtail, a beautiful female swallowtail. And within a few days, the female hatched, and I spent that whole time trying to keep her alive. I bought bouquets of flowers, thinking she would, I made a little puddle with mud so she could get her minerals. And she lived 10 days, and I felt horrible about it. But the other cocoon didn't hatch, and it didn't hatch. So I brought, it was mid-December, I brought the container back to the center, and she took it home with her that Sunday. Just yesterday, she sent me a photograph. She said, 5 months and 2 weeks later, it finally hatched. And here was this beautiful butterfly, a little female, just like the one I had. But this, the difference in this one was she was out in the daffodils. She was let go because she has 60, 70 degree temperature, not 25 degrees, which is what it was like when I had the monarch butterfly. And I was told that she needs a 60 degree temperature to survive. So I was going through a little bit of an effort and struggle on that one. Just to understand, there's a magical world that you never left. And to understand what it means to be coming home. It's a homecoming that is said to lead from time as a construct into eternity. Huh. To lead us from death into immortality. So instead of seeing this as I'm going to identify with a finite self that's going to die, I'm identifying with the eternal spirit that was never born and never dies. Every time I'm given the privilege to do a memorial service, I go to that magical place that knows the spirit never died. Yes, the form left. And every time I'm caught up in this illusion of time, a 43-year-old marrying a 28-year-old and seeing that this disparity in age, I just remind myself that there is no time in spirit. And so I am eternally 1 second old. And then I'm 1 second old again. And then I'm another second old. And after a while, this milk carton will perish, but the eternal self will live on forever. So what if when we're coming home to this something that is so much vaster than this finite self? That's what they're all pointing toward. Little Titchmore, this is in the introduction. Enlightenment is not a magical transcendence of the human condition, but rather it's a full flowering of our own humanity. It was Carl Jung that says you cannot escape our humanity. So instead of trying to pursue the divinity, be fully human in order to experience your divinity. Huh. So it's counterintuitive. The flowering of humanity, disclosing a unity and an equilibrium at the heart of everything, where love and suffering can come together and all existence is revealed to an enlightened human being as a seamless whole, as in truth, one divine life. One divine life, God's life, perfect, your life, my life, all life, that one life. So that little butterfly is as divine as I am, as you are. It's just a different form. And so as I was plodding through this book and the many, many different ways of getting there, I kind of went to the very end where they talked about the Sufi path. Because I studied with the Sufis and it was life-changing for me. You know, you can talk about love, but the Sufis say what we are is love. And someone noticed the painting in the hallway out there, and she's been coming here for a very long time and never noticed the painting. It just says dissolve. Sharon Ledford painted it. And then underneath the word dissolve is beloved, 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 beloved. So what are you dissolving into? You're dissolving into this true nature, this essence. What is God but a simple essence, the cost of which is nothing less than everything? So to know ourselves as that, we, in a sense, dissolve into that, and then that becomes what we are. They say all swimming in the ocean of love ends in drowning. So there's no Jake and the ocean of love. There's just the ocean of love. And it appears as the wave of Jake and the wave of Michael and the wave of David and the wave of Jesus. It's the same ocean of love. And it happens not by our effort or our willfulness. In fact, one of the greatest things you can have on the spiritual path is just a willingness to be done or to be undone, if you will, to let this power have you. So at the end of the book, Sufi Path, he talks about Allah. Allah is a name for God. Allah means the emptiness. And there's the saying, Allah brings to Allah whom Allah will. And then in the Sufi tradition, they say, and only Allah can see Allah. Only God can see God. So what if David can't see God, but the God within David sees only God? Ernest Holmes would call it love. He says, when you know yourself as love, then love sees only love, or Allah sees only Allah, and only love sees love. So could we know ourselves as that something so much vaster than this finite self? Even though it's a lovely finite self, it's not what we are. It's the impermanent. It's the time-bound creature, and we're that eternal something. So I've shared these. These are the yantras of the world religions, and they're all pointing. I had this holy man say, you could look at any one of these and meditate on it, and it could take you to enlightenment. Because they're sacred symbolisms. Look, like the symbol of the cross is not the thing upon which Jesus died with his hands nailed in and his feet nailed. I can remember that effigy just disturbing me as a little child looking up at that thing. How is that going to make me feel loving? What that symbol represents, this ancient symbol, is the eternal now moment, the vertical cutting through the horizontal, which is the time-space continuum. And at that intersection is the now moment. And that's what it's pointing to. All we ever experience is the eternal now moment, one breath at a time, eternity revealed. And that's the resurrection. We resurrect into that awareness. So here's what he says at the Sufi path at the very end of the book. Allah brings to Allah whom Allah will. And he says, only Allah can know Allah. And it is only God who seeks God. The spiritual longing that expresses itself through humanity is none other than this divine presence circling upon itself, circling in upon itself. This intense love for seekers is simply a love for God. And so when you see a student of truth, someone who is seeking this presence, it's really the presence that's seeking an avenue, an outlet through the seeker. And so then you can say you move from being the seeker to being the sought. He talks about the gnosis, or the deep knowing that flowers within the individual. A gnosis, or a liberating knowing, comes from within. It does not originate from the seeker through his human efforts, but is received as a priceless gift from the divine. It's a gift from the divine. And then in their beautiful simplicity, he says, the qualities of the divine, the benevolence of this divine presence, this compassionate nature of this divine presence, the justice that is inherent in the universe. When we start acting in those qualities, the contention is that you are being godlike. When you're being compassionate, when you're benevolent, when you're being loving, when you're being peaceful, you're being godlike. So coming home, we come home to the qualities of the presence. Now you can ask yourself, Emerson says, do you tell me a man's argument and I'll tell you his God? Some people have an angry, wrathful God. And so when they come home to their God, they're going to be angry and wrathful and call some people sinners and some people evil and some people good. I don't have that kind of God. You know, some people have a God that's a judge. He shall come to judge the quick and the dead. I don't have a judging God. I don't have a king in the sky. My evangelical brother-in-law, he has a king, somehow a king, a royal king is his God. I don't have a king. I don't have a he is a God. So could we explore then, what would this place called home look like for you in your world? And what would it look like for me? And that's the fun thing about this. It's not a finite place. It's an invisible place that we get to discover for ourselves. I'm teaching this lovely class, and it's all about not chasing after the divinity, but it's about meeting our humanity and noticing where we're stuck, where we suffer, where we experience reaction, where we experience shempa. And so we're all going to be triggered. We're all going to have moments where something from the outer triggers something on the inner. And Pema Chodron's invitation is, that's a gift when that happens. Because if everything is divine, even that is divine. So instead of trying to have the perfect life, denying what we don't want and affirming what we do, we begin to embrace the very stuff that are our challenges, that are our obstacles. And when we do, she has a three-pronged process. You enter into the moment with whatever, like Susan was really exhausted this morning, but she decided, I'm coming anyway. So she went into the present moment. The second thing is you touch your heart. That's that compassionate place, because the heart knows oneness, whereas the head wants to be duplicitous, call it good and bad, right and wrong, this way, that way. No, heart just says whatever way is right for you, my love. So that's why we enter the present moment, we enter into our heart, and then we take the next step. She calls it, we take a leap of faith. And, you know, my husband, he's been reading the Pema Chodron book, because when he opened it, he said, oh my God, my whole life is Shempa. He said, I live in Shempa, which is reaction. And you know what the universe gives you when you decide to work on yourself? It gave him the biggest Shempa that the universe could ever give him as a gift. And I reminded him, honey, this is here for you. And so the one thing Trey has a very, very difficult time with is a lot of noise, and especially the sound of chainsaws cutting trees down. because his whole mission in life is to save as many trees as he can. So we have a new renter that moved in just right across the alley from our house, and he goes to where they're building houses, big houses in suburban areas where they clear out the wood and then they build the house. And so he gets all the leftover trees and he hauls them back in his truck. And then he pulls down the alleyway behind our house and his whole backyard is filled with dead trees. And from morning till night, he's chainsawing and chainsawing. So much for nap time, so much for lying in the hammock in the backyard. And so rather than to act out in anger, Trey decided to approach this from a mindful way. Enter present moment, touching his heart, taking the leap, and making friends over the stone wall. Getting to know the young man by first name. He has a young wife, she's pregnant, he's taking care of the mother, and his livelihood, his business, is cutting down the wood. And so it turned into kind of a rancorous thing yesterday afternoon. He yelled at Trey, and then Trey yelled at him, and I said, honey, this isn't going to achieve that beautiful place of oneness that you're striving for. So I watched how he just shifted out of being an angry person. You know, when someone comes and attacks you, you can very easily attack back, or you can move into that calm place and hear them with your heart. So he said, I understand that you are concerned about providing food for your wife and your new baby. He says, but this is a quiet neighborhood, and so many of us are retired here, and we value the stillness and the quiet of the neighborhood. So could we work together? So for an hour, I watched these two people going at it in the backyard. Now, will it resolve itself? The beauty was, is it doesn't have to resolve itself. Trey came from that loving place. He communicated from that loving place. And we'll see how it unfolds. He even offered to buy a piece of land where he could do his wood just to get it out of the backyard so he doesn't have to. I said, I think that was a little excessive and generous on your part, but whatever works, works. So he's attempting to, at choice point, to choose something from an open-hearted awareness place and communicate it effectively, and hopefully it's heard with the same intention from what's it said. In other words, you need to stop this. I even shared with him how we learn nonviolent communication here at the Center for Spiritual Living. So if you're having a conversation, you never say to somebody, you need to do this. You don't put that finger out because that can be an assault. Rather, when you're communicating effectively, you make I statements. I'm very sensitive to a lot of noise, and I get very stressed out when I hear chainsaws from morning till night. I need to have a calm environment in order for me to feel, and then you're not blaming them. You're just establishing what you require in your own life form. So we all get to create our own sanctuary garden as best as we can, and sometimes there's going to be a chainsaw in the garden. And you get to face, how am I going to meet the chainsaw when the chainsaw shows up? So coming home isn't something you do and then you've already all of a sudden arrived at this place where stuff doesn't happen. No. Stuff is going to continue to happen, but the way we respond to it is different. My friend Terry reminded me that we're always at a choice point. We can always choose how we're going to respond. It says in the Science of Mind, you cannot live a choiceless life. Every moment we're making a choice. Some of you chose to be here on Sunday morning. Some of you chose to tune in virtual world. And I think you're choosing to listen with your hearts and maybe to meet whatever life is bringing you in a more proactive instead of a reactive way. And that's an effective way to live your life. So I love to explore an idea, to undress something as simple as coming home to the truth of our being. Mark Nepo is a poet who's lived through cancer. And in his journey through life, he found that it was always coming back to that place that sustained him. When he had the cancer, he went to that place. When he had divorce, he went to that place. And so here's how he describes this dance with the beloved. I think it's here, yeah. Rising through our faults. This is kind of what Trey went through yesterday. I was hiking near the tree line when it started to rain. Boy, we can relate to that. And I was washed of where to go. The path washed away and he had to find a new path. Looking about me, I realized that the fates wait for those moments that we finalize our plans only to set our maps on fire. It's not going to look the way you think it is. When the map gets torched, you have to find a new way to navigate. He says, they send a storm to blow the secret from your hand, and they let a downpour wash the trail from under your feet. Not to be harsh, but to force us to believe in ourselves. You know, when life falls apart, and it will, then we can say, how can I navigate now? So it forces us to believe in ourselves. And when overcome with things that are too big to understand, our mind will stretch. And when stopped by things that are too delicate to hold, well, then our grip will soften, he says. And when touched by things that are impossible to name, well, then we drop all pretense, like we've got it all figured out. I don't know what to name this thing. Is it good? Is it bad? It just is. And he said, I was caught in the rain. I was caught in between two worlds, and I could see. What makes these mountains majestic is how they were tipped from the earth and frozen into place. And to stand before them dwarfs all human trouble. It's the same when our souls are caught, rising through our own faults. And when forced into the open, then we break into the mystery and we settle into our place because we have come home. To stand before them dwarfs this human trouble. It's the same when our souls are caught, rising through our own faults. And when forced into the open, we break into a majesty and settle in our place because we've come home. So sometimes life is going to wash out the pathway that you were on. And you're going to think, I don't know what to do next. But in that breaking open, it takes you to a place where you believe in yourself. That's that ineffable something that says, you're going to be okay. You're going to make it through this. This is life, yet again, creating another obstacle so that you can traverse it. And it's that old TTP philosophy. Trust the process of life. Terry and Mary had a flooded basement. It's getting better this week. They took some action. You know, Trey and I had flooded basements forever in our house when these downpours would come, only to realize that we had entryways from the side of the house where the water was getting in. And two old guys walking around this house, 1920s, we sprayed in that foam, and you know what? We stopped the rain from coming in. And we learned to believe in ourselves. We learned to believe in ourselves that we can, even though we don't have a great skill with a lot of technical stuff, we can at least patch a hole and stop the rain from coming in. So what if this is the gift of life, that the challenges are there for us, not there against us? To be fully present, to feel with your heart, and then to take that leap. To take that leap. So I went to John O'Donohue's little book of blessings, and he did a blessing for coming home. And I'm going to use that as the closing meditation. And I'm going to invite you to find the blessing of the home calling you, calling me into this refuge, into this sanctuary place where it can be the sustaining spaciousness no matter what life brings us, that we can literally stay at home, the most treasured place to find. There's a saying that say you can travel the whole world over and look for happiness, but if you don't have it there within you, you're not going to find it. So what if in all our seeking, in all our searching, our spiritual searching, our whatever searching, we realize that it's not about searching out there, but it's about going home and then knowing that it was there all along, it was waiting. That's the whole message of the Wizard of Oz. In this beautiful myth, which is the great myth of the prodigal son searching for your good out there, only to realize it was never out there. And when they asked Dorothy, what did you learn? I learned to never look any further than my own backyard, because if it isn't there, I never lost it to begin with. Is that it? Yes, that's it. Why didn't you tell me? Because you wouldn't believe me if I had. You had to discover it for yourself. So could we find that place called home, which is right there, right now, sitting in your chair, watching it on the TV. It's right there. It never went anywhere. Huh. And it's just sitting there waiting for us to put our attention on it, to let it breathe through us, to let it know through us. You know, when the presence is knowing through me, it doesn't know in thought. It has a felt knowing, you know? Like, what do I know around life and death? I know that love never dies, and what we are is love. And so when the form leaves, whether it's a pet, whether it's a parent, yes, the form leaves, but the love is still there. And the love is what was real. So Tess isn't here in form. But you know, every time I plug that light in that she made, that you gave me, I feel her love is there shining at me. And I know I sound crazy, Michael, but I still feel her smiling at me and feel the love that she put in when she created that little amber bottle with some lights in it that is so precious to me because it represents the love that she still is. So could we think a little out of the box? That's the invitation when you come here to the center. You know, get a religion that's out of the box. You don't need a religion. You don't need a map. And if you're lucky, the map will be destroyed. It'll burn up and you'll have to find a new map. You know, and I love people who do that. John O'Donohue was a priest for many, many years. And he says, I finally had to get out of the priesthood because there was too much sin there. But when he left the priesthood, boy, did he find his spirituality. He started studying the mystics like Meister Eckhart, who said, the only begotten is ever begetting itself in me right now. Feel that one. This is the resurrection, the only begotten. That would be Jesus himself or the Christ is ever, ever, in every holy instant, begetting itself in me. Feel into that one. Boy, then you get humbled. Could I be the way that this is revealing itself on planet? So here's John O'Donohue's blessing at the end of the book for homecoming. This is the homecoming, coming home to ourselves. So he says, may this sacred garden shelter your life, the sacred garden called home. And when you come home here, may all the weight of the world fall from your shoulders. Now we're talking about this inner place of home. But you could also reflect on your outer place of home. That's what Trey was trying to say. He wants his physical home to be a place of sanctuary, a place of calm. So may the weight of the world fall away from your shoulders when you go home. And may your heart be tranquil here, blessed by the peace that a world outside cannot give you. May your heart be tranquil here, in this place called home, within, blessed by a peace that the world cannot give you. That implies that the peace is there right now. And may this home be a lucky place where the grace of life fills you and always finds a pathway to your door. Grace is the unmerited givingness of the universe. That means you don't have to earn it. So could this place of home be a fountain of grace-filled moments? You know, I feel very graced to have you in the sanctuary, to have beautiful Michael here running the technical, to have beloved Gigi doing the candles and the lights all around you, to have these lovely souls show up on Sunday morning. That's grace for me. He says, may this home be a lucky place where the graces of life flow, always finding a pathway to your door, and may nothing destructive ever cross your threshold. That's kind of a wish, isn't it? May nothing destructive ever cross your threshold. And may this be a safe place, full of understanding and acceptance, this place within, where you can be as you are, without the need to wear masks of pretense or image. And may this home within be a safe place, full of understanding and acceptance, where you can be as you are, without the need of any mask of pretense or image. And lastly, may this home be a place of discovery, where the possibilities that sleep in the clay of your soul can emerge to deepen and refine your own vision for all that is yet to come to birth through you and all around you. And may this home, this place we find within, be a place of discovery, where the possibilities that sleep in the clay of your soul can emerge to deepen and refine your own vision for all that is yet to come to birth through you. And lastly, may it be a home of courage, where healing and growth are loved, where dignity and forgiveness prevail, a home where patience of spirit is prized and the sight of the destination is never lost. Though the journey be difficult and slow, may there be great delight around this hearth, and may it be a home that welcomes you for the broken and diminished parts of yourself. And may you have the eyes to see that no visitor arrives without a gift, nor No guest leaves without a blessing. So may this home be a home of courage, where healing and growth are loved, where dignity and forgiveness prevail, a home where patience of spirit is prized, and the sight of the destination is never lost. Though the journey be difficult and slow, may there be great delight around this hearth, and may it be a home of welcome for the broken and diminished parts of yourself, knowing that no visitor arrives without a gift and no guest leaves without a blessing. And so I invite you to receive the blessing of that beautiful tribute from John O'Donohue. We are here to bless the moment, to bless the life that we've been given, and in that blessing to receive the grace, to receive the good, to receive the possibilities that we discover through lowly listening are waiting for us. It's the abundance of the universe. It says in the Bible, I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly. So that abundance is an abundance of spirit, an abundance of awareness, an abundance of possibility that are available to us, not by seeking it in the world. Yes, that's one path we could pursue, but instead by discovering it from within. And when we come home to the truth of who we are, this eternal being, that lives in every breath, in every moment, and the totality of possibilities are available to each one of us through the clay of our soul. They emerge as idea, as insight, as possibility, as a longing. And we say, yes, I have arrived, I am home. I have arrived at this spacious knowing, this gnosis of truth. That's what the Gnostic movement is all about. To discover there's this gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S, this knowing at the core of our being that doesn't have answers, but that is filled with an open-hearted awareness that there is one life. That's God's life. That life is perfect. And that hidden wholeness reveals itself when we put our attention on the breath, on the peace, on the compassion, on the possibility, and we say, yes, we witness you. And in this witnessing of this divine presence operating within and all around us, we realize that we've come home yet again, and again, and again, in the one breath, the one love, and we know ourselves as that, not as a separate self in a separate container that maybe is special or not special. No, we're just the everything and the nothing. We are that empty presence. And yet form arises within that presence. And we are the witness of that. And that sets us free to be all that we are. Feel that connection. It never went anywhere. And I invite you to put your hands over your heart space in this present moment and join with me in the heart salutation by saying, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you. In this place we are one. And all is well. We now open to the grace. We open our eyes. We say yes, 1,000 times yes. And as we do so, grace pours herself into us with every breath and every brilliant, illuminated twinkle that we are. luminosity abides, and you are that luminosity. Light and love shining back. Thank you for sending in your tithes, everybody. Stay safe. Easter Sunday's next week, so we'll celebrate my 33rd Easter together.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, visit our website at www.cslhuntsville.org.